for those who know every line, and for those finding Star Wars for the very first time, welcome to Growing Up Skywalker.
Welcome to Growing Up Skywalker. I'm Sam.
Hi, I'm Anna.
And we are doing Andor Season 1, Episode 8, Narkeena 5. A little bit of a tough episode for us. Anna has COVID and I got laid off yesterday, so.
Yeah, this was the darkest of dark episodes in a very dark week for us. I straight up did not have fun with this one.
Yeah, yeah.
I had like a little bit of fun.
I had quite a bit of fun.
I had some dark fun.
Is dark fun.
Type 2 fun.
Dark fun. Like you're a dark Disney villain. Anyway, let's get into it and talk about what's going on in Narkeena 5. So we start off, we'll run the A plot for Andor by his nom de turisto, Keef Gurga?
Keef Gurga.
Keef Gurga. What a space name.
What a name.
So he's been yeeted off to the planet of Narkeena 5, which is a prison planet. He immediately has to remove his shoes. And as he lands on this planet, we see a whole bunch of like sea bases that are just in the middle of this massive sea. And they land, the floor is electrified. So everyone's playing The Floor is Lava all the time.
It's tungstoid steel. So mm-hmm. all of the guards get to wear these really dumb looking boots that protect them from the floor. But all of the prisoners have to go around barefoot. And if they do anything that's off program, mm-hmm. they get immediately fried. So just their nervous system goes into complete collapse.
So we follow a month in the life of Cassian Andor as Keef Gurga as he runs around learning how to be an inmate on Narkeena 5. So we meet a couple we meet his table because he is on the factory floor. He has to be assembling these things. And then it's like this program where Kino Loy, who is the floor manager, also acts as their capo. He's the, like, prisoner guard for them.
So Narkeena 5, this is basically a factory facility for the Empire. There are 7 floors, there are 7 rooms per floor, there are 7 tables per room, and 7 men to a table. Mm-hmm. So every man at a table is playing against the other tables. Every room is playing against every other room. Mm-hmm. And so the whole factory is competing to be, if not the most productive, then definitely not the least productive, because the least productive tables get fried.
The most productive table gets taste and flavor with their food.
Whoa. That comes out of a tube in the wall.
Yeah. And so we go through a month of this. Day one, Cassian is severely traumatized by his experience. But then we flash forward a month and he's doing better. Everyone wants to know, hey, all of our sentences were doubled last month as a result of the PORD, which is a great acronym for the Aldani, Retribution Act. And Andor's like, I have no knowledge of anything that may or may not have happened before or after ever.
The irony of everyone being up in Cassian's biz about Aldani, mm-hmm. and he has to keep pretending like he didn't make it a success.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone has a little counter in their little cell that shows them how many days they have left. So Kino Loy, who is the leader, who's played by Andy Serkis, delightfully, is like, I have 289 days left.
It used to be 144.
Right. And so if you mess with me, then I'll make your life hell. But I'm just here. I'm a short timer at this point.
You mess with me, you get the horn, son. Mm-hmm.
So that's the Narkeena 5 plot. It's this sterile white environment. It's very industrial. There's lots of yelling. It's
There's some dark. Shady stuff going on with a couple of Cassian's table mates. They seem to be communicating with sign language.
Right, because there's undersea tubes, and one of his table mates is able to use hand signals to talk to someone in the other tubes.
Mm-hmm. But other than that, it is very much business as usual on Narkeena 5. There are some different forms of imprisonment going on across the galaxy, though.
Speaking of, let's move to the Cyril plot. Cyril Karn, And his boss, who we learned his name is Flob, which is just, what a name.
What a name.
So he's sitting there at his octagon because they can't afford cubicles in space. And a little mouse droid and two ISBs and his boss roll up and take him in for questioning. And he's sitting there shaking literally in his boots when Deidre Miro shows up and is like, hello, you have screwed up so far beyond the realm of screwing up.
He has filed like a million false reports about Cassian and his terrible fuel purity job.
Because he's trying to set up Cassian to be caught by the ISB. And so Deidre is like, you have invoked the curiosity of the ISB. And if you tell me everything you know about what actually happened on Ferrix, what's not in the report, then I will tell your boss that you cooperated with the Empire and everything will be great. And he's like, I wasn't allowed to read the report. And she's like, okay, this is a situation which must be rectified. She gives him the report to read, and then she goes and gives her report to
her grand boss,
Yularen.
That's Yularen?
Yeah.
How do I keep missing this? He's so fundamentally disinterested in what he's doing.
Oh, no, he's not. But there's a very great scene where Deidre is like beginning her presentation, and then there's a pause as she waits for like questioning from Yularen, and the pause goes on a little bit too long, and he's like, I'm listening. Oh, that's like a power move, honestly.
I honestly started sweating from my armpits. If that happened to me when I was giving a presentation, I would simply kill myself.
Just in front of everyone.
Just the worst.
So she gives a presentation about how they've codenamed a character Axis, and Axis was last seen in the company of Cassian Andor on Ferrix, so they need to track down Cassian Andor, drill down, dig him out. This is the only mistake that Axis has made. And as Yularen is questioning Miro, Partagaz jumps in, and he's like, she's done great work. She's convinced me.
So the reason that she wants to hunt down Axis is because she is convinced that Axis, who we know as Luthen, has been organizing the rebel theft across the galaxy and getting this classified Imperial tech to different rebel cells, which is
a great segue for what is going on in the rest of the plot lines here.
What is up with Axis?
Well, so real quick, we finish off that Deidre comes back and is like, Cyril, what do you know? And he's like, I know that this Axis character was a man and he was tall and he was wearing a gray robe. And Deidre Miro's like, you are so worthless. He's like, no, I was a good deputy inspector. I can work for you. And she's like, forget everything you've ever existed. Just unalive yourself.
He really makes his play with Miro and she fly swats him down. Because he's so focused on Cassian, he didn't even think about Luthen.
Yeah, yeah. And she's like, if you can't tell me about this Axis character, I know everything I need to know about Cassian Andor.
So anyway, Axis, Luthen.
Well, let's back up. Let's go through the Mon Mothma plot here, too, because there's a little bit that she's going on with.
The Mon Mothma swanky Hunger Games party plot?
It's not a Hunger Games party.
It's very, very heavily contrasted with Cassian's time in prison.
So it's a pretty short little scene. Her and her husband, Perrin, are sitting there, and we learn a few key factoids. One is that Mon Mothma and Tay can't actually move the money they need to move. They're trying to move 400,000 credits, which I guess seems like a lot to us until you realize that 80 million was stolen from Aldani, but 400,000 still seems like a lot. So she can't move that. And she's like talking with all these people. And we learn that she became a senator at 16. And she was also already married to Perrin by then.
For a year. She was 15. Year. It's the old country Chandrilin custom.
Mm-hmm. And then there's a bunch of talk about how the emperor is overreaching and the PORD legislation is super bad. And this is delightfully intercut over, you know, the other inmates questioning Andor about what's going on. So that's what Mon Mothma is up to in this one. And importantly, there's also a Ferrix subplot. So we cut into Marva, who is being attended to by Bix. And Marva has gone pretty downhill health-wise in the last month. She's not doing great.
She's also gone full rebel.
So apparently she was found by like the Ferrix factory workers as she was trying to pry open the grate under the hotel that the Empire has taken over so that she can let the rebellion in. And she's like 80. And so when she falls, it's a big deal.
Oh.
But Bix and Brasso are like, she's like too old for this. This is terrible. What are we going to do? And Bix decides they got to get Cassian because she's dying. They got to bring Cassian in. And so she goes to
Pax Shipyard.
She goes to Pax Shipyard, which is where her telephone to Luthen is. And she starts making calls. And now we cut to Axis. Luthen is sitting there in his lair.
Claire his lair, his beautiful art gallery on Coruscant. Oh, that's two blocks away from Mon Mothma's house.
If he was in the DC universe, that would be like a supervillain lair because yeah. The Empire would be the good guys. But no, I mean, if you had a lair, wouldn't you want it like, oh, this is a 20,000-year-old suit of armor that's possibly haunted by a Sith ghost? Like,
if I needed a lair, it would be Mon Mothma's beautiful house.
Okay, fair.
That is my kind of lair. The anti-lair.
Anyways, so Luthen is like, Luthen and Clea have this talk and they're like, all right, we need to cut Andor off. Like we just cannot take this call from Bix. The Ferrix cell is dead to us. We've gotten everything we need out of them. We're gonna do not accept their calls anymore. Number blocked. Bix keeps dialing. Vel and Cinta are watching Bix and Brasso.
Undercover.
And Vel has to leave off on 3 Jackdaws Bus Incorporated. But...
Because they need to hunt down Cassian and kill him.
They need to hunt down Cassian and kill him.
So I guess one real benefit of being imprisoned on Arkina 5 is that your former coworkers can't hunt you down and,
no one
and
can
murder you.
Yeah, you're just some dude in a cell. So as a result of this call, that's enough for Deidre to show up and start interrogating people. She interrogates Pack, who gives up Bix. Bix is caught in a crowd and is led into the interrogation chamber. However, Luthen is also up to his old tricks. He takes the Fondor out. He takes the long way to Saw Flippin' Gerrera. And he's like, I want you to work with Anto Krieger. I will give you... presumably some nice X-Wing parts in exchange for working with this guy. And Saw Gerrera gives this speech about every other rebel cell that he's aware of. And like 3 of them we've maybe heard of, like the Gormians who...
The Gormans.
The Gormans who Mon Mothma has been like trying to defend this whole time. And
oh, yeah.
Neo-Republicans and separatists.
Human
and
cultists.
He's like talking to all of them. He says, I am the only one with clarity of purpose.
Uh-huh.
And Luthen's like, yeah, I mean, anarchy sounds great, but...
You're living in a cave drinking cold tea.
Yeah, like, I need you to work together or I'm going to bounce.
I need you to shape up or ship out. And Saw Gerrera is like, I would rather sit here and freeze my buns off than work with anybody I don't want to work with. I am not a team player.
Mm-hmm. And so that is where we leave this episode. We leave with Cyril being... as thoroughly admonished as a man can possibly be, we leave with Cassian getting to, you know the ropes of how to assemble these robo bits that he's making.
Being a very good little prisoner.
We leave Brasso taking care of Marva, who's on the downslope. We leave Bix in a torture chair. We leave Luthen leaving with a bunch of useful equipment from Saw Gerrera. And Mon Mothma... not nursing a hangover that Perrin probably has because he's sitting there and the Chandrillan drinks they have, they add worms to them and
squigs.
Yeah. And even Leia's like, that's disgusting. So
it squigged me out. Yeah. That was a pretty chipper recap of a deeply haunting and unsettling episode that hasn't left me for a week.
Well, this is the first Andor episode that we get to see X-Wings in. In fact, chronologically, this is the first time we get to see X-Wings.
When did we see X-Wings?
They're parked outside of Saw Gerrera's base.
Oh.
This is the first time we've seen X-Wings. I am incredibly hyped for X-Wings.
I'm
That's
so happy for you.
Thank you.
I don't care.
I know.
Okay, is John Hamm in this? Was he Ham at Cassian's table?
No, that is not John Hamm.
Are you serious?
That's Clemens Schick.
No way.
Yeah, who I've never seen before.
John Hamm with his hair pushed back is identical to that guy.
Totally different.
Dang it. But ruined my whole punchline.
No, sorry.
Anyway, that was the one thing that brought me joy in this entire episode. What shall we talk about?
Well, let's talk about the prison industrial complex and
the surveillance state.
Yeah. So, okay, a surveillance state, starting off with that, because that is what Mon Mothma is functionally talking about. She gets into this conversation with the other, who would they be?
Politicians.
There is actually in the Disney Plus subtitles, there's a little thing that says debutante laughs. So the debutantes are...
it's a bunch of ambassadors and senators.
And so they're all talking about the same conversation that everyone and their sister had on September 12th, 2001, or on October 8th, 2023, of if you don't have anything to fear from the surveillance state, what do you have to hide? Like, why are you afraid of it if you have nothing to hide?
And Mon brings up a really excellent point, which is, well, I'm concerned about your definition of what's wrong.
Yes, but, and that's just true of every surveillance state throughout history, is that like it's basically just used to crack down on political dissidents as opposed to actual crime.
It's also, it's not just that Mon is talking about it at her party, it's that Cassian and the Narkina 5 facility are living it, right?
Yeah.
So, okay, I wish that I didn't have COVID, and I wish that this episode could have come out on Halloween like it was planned to, because that's how spooky and unsettling it is. So we talked a little bit about the Narkina 5 facility.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on is all of the prisoners are basically in a large version of the lever experiment from B.F. Skinner, the Skinner box, where if you put a rat in a box and you give it a lever, and the rat learns that the lever will produce a kibble of food when the rat presses the lever, it will push the lever when it's hungry. But if you only intermittently and randomly allow the food to come out when the rat pushes the lever, it will press it almost continuously and to the point of exhaustion. And this is the conditions that the Narkina 5 prisoners are living in. They're not only competing to not be last in their tables, making whatever engine pieces,
space widgets,
that they're making, they're also competing for a basic integral function which was taken away from them, which is the ability to taste the food that you're eating. They've been sensory deprived.
Yep.
And they're trying to get one of their human functions back. And it's like they're competing not just to not get punished, but also for like the tiniest freedom allotted to them by this system that has them in like glass boxes constantly monitored. And just, I'm at a loss for words.
There's, in addition to that, an additional darker layer, because my view of this is actually more similar to the concentration camps of World War II, which also were often used as labor camps. And then the word capo comes from that, which is a prisoner would be selected to be the internal leader.
I thought capo was just Italian for captain.
No.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And so it comes from these concentration camps, and it was the collaborator. And more often than not, it would be because the concentration camps took everyone of, you know, political dissidents, Jews, gypsies, homosexuals, people branded as such. It took them in, and then the most hardened criminals amongst them were elevated to the rank of capo. So they could be sitting there enacting power. And that goes back to like the lessons of colonialism and difference, that like if you tell someone that you and that other person are in a zero-sum experiment, then they're going to beat up that person. They don't care about the conditions of the externalities, because all they care about is not being beat up by someone else.
Yeah, it's like when Ezra went undercover in Stormtrooper Academy.
Exactly.
And you just had to be in the top three you just had to not be in the middle of the pack to to succeed, right? And so Ezra had to keep, you know, undercutting the kids that he was with for a mission. But if he had just been an overachieving potential stormtrooper, it would have been the same thing.
Yeah. So the idea of using prisoners as labor for the Imperial War Machine is in itself very dark. And the fact that they have this spotless and clean, the introduction, this guard comes in and gives an introduction, and he has the most delightful space accent. I love it.
Very transatlantic. And also, like, his gaze is so... It's a stellar performance. He could have done a lot less with it than he did. He's like looking off into the middle distance and smirking.
Yeah.
He's like, I think you'll find, if you were previously incarcerated, that the calm and sanitary conditions and our minimally invasive enforcement techniques will be much to your liking. The quality of your time is really up to you.
And he's speaking with like a Welsh and Mongolian accent simultaneously. It's like two accents blended together to make it space. Wow. His accent is just space. And I loved it. I wrote it down multiple times. I'm like, this is a great performance. But yeah, compared to the other instances of space prisons that we've seen, which is not many, this seems like, I don't know. It's weird how sterile and clean it is, but it's also you're working in a clean room basically to work on this stuff.
Well, and it was horrifying because all of the prisoners have just been loaded into this transport. They have no belongings. They don't know what's going to happen. And when this guy clomps up and is speaking to them so politely, I almost started to think like, wow, maybe Cassian landed somewhere not completely outrageously awful. And then they get fried for the first time. And I'm like, this is the darkest plot line.
Yeah. Yeah. It's terrible.
It's just, Andor keeps giving me a mirror into not only what makes me deeply, deeply uncomfortable about our society, but also what makes me deeply uncomfortable about my life. If Narkeena 5 is not the corporate rat race, then what is?
I think the Imperial Standards Bureau probably is.
Probably, but just like this idea that people can give you enough stick and just enough carrot to make you really work yourself to the bone for so little resonated so much with me as I'm sick with COVID from like working myself too hard at my job.
Yeah. What's interesting about that is that let's contrast that with the conversation Luthen had with Saw Gerrera. Because Luthen basically doesn't have a stick in that. He only has carrot. He's only saying, there's nothing I can do to stop you. You're obviously doing great here in your cave. I will give you some really nice stuff. And he offers off like five things. And Saw's like, I would like those three things specifically. Those I need. And Luthen's like, all you need to do is work with this other guy. And Saw Gerrera
goes off.
He has this like ideal of himself as like a political idealist, a political purist, and thinks that no one else shares his vision, and contrasts that with the vision of the Empire, with its panopticon of security, with its complete like dragnet of understanding, with the ability for them to track down Bix. Freaking Bix.
From just a bunch of like blinkers in an old silo.
Yeah. Amazing. Amazing.
So let's, okay, let's return to this idea in a minute, but let's talk a little bit about Saw Gerrera.
Yeah.
How many years has it been since we saw Saw Gerrera in Rebels?
Well, we saw him in Bad Batch, and it's like 12 or 15.
Okay, the man is aging like milk.
He's living in caves.
He is doing terribly.
So he's gone gray. He's
raspy.
He's raspy.
He's got a big old scar on his face. A
lot of scars. And he's wearing an amount of robo suit. Now, the thing is, if you are doing Saw Gerrera crap, which includes like attempting to blow up the facility in Bad Batch where Tech dies. Remember?
No. please don't impugn my honor by implying that I don't think about tech dying at least twice a week, Sam, because I do.
So the kind of thing that he's doing, running around, pretending to be a stormtrooper, blowing stuff up, sabotaging things, probably involves not following OSHA standards and being exposed to toxic chemicals, which will age you rapidly.
No, I'm sure. Well, so we met Saw Gerrera. In the Clone Wars, season 4 on Onderon, they're living in the jungle.
He's already 25 by then.
He looked about 25. Steela, his sister, looked honestly younger.
Mm-hmm.
But they were fit and healthy and doing great and seemed resilient. So it is just a little bit of a weird jump to see this old man.
Yeah, he definitely doesn't look 40.
No.
He looks closer to 70.
But and also, it's interesting because I think the Clone Wars gave me enough background to kind of understand what Saw Gerrera is about, but not enough. So Saw and Steela are both vying to lead the Onderonian rebellion, right? And Steela mm-hmm. is of the heart. Well, so Lux Bonteri is the hearts and minds guy. Mm-hmm. Saw Gerrera is the blood and fire guy. And Steela Gerrera is the middle of that.
Hearts and fire.
Hearts and fire. Would you say that she could have set the galaxy on fire? Fire across the galaxy? I think she could.
Maybe.
She dies. Saw takes over the rebellion. And now it seems like his extremist beliefs have calcified even further. But I don't know what he wants.
So Luthen calls him out on it and says, anarchy seems like a luxury to someone living in a cave.
Is anarchy what he wants?
It seems like it because of, from inferring what he's talking about, going through the just list of people who are on Saw Gerrera's crap list, we have separatists, neo-Republicans, and so that covers like people who want...
That sounds like the Chuchis of the world.
Yeah, and then you also had like galactic... you had partisans and then like galactic districtists or something. People who'd break the galaxy into different parts.
Oh, sectionists.
Sectionists, yeah. And so you have people who want to be free of the Empire. You have people who want to restore the Republic. You have people who want to break the galaxy into self-regulating segments. And Saw is like, these ideas are all terrible.
But what is his idea?
Well, okay, so ideologically, he would align himself with one of those unless he was either full anarchist or full communist or wanted to be the emperor. He doesn't want to be the emperor. He doesn't seem like someone who wants to bring like a full unified post-scarcity economy to the galaxy, which means he is, by process of elimination, an anarchist.
How is anarchy the solution?
It's just complete full self-regulation. And this is where like the horseshoe theory loops around, is into the muddied waters of anarchism, where you have like...
The horseshoe being like that the political spectrum, you think that it's a line and the far right and far left are super apart from each other, but instead the horseshoe wraps them closer together.
Yeah, but it's like an eight-dimensional horseshoe and it's only ever on one axis. But like the idea of like, because there's many things that separate out a lot of different political ideals and there's multiple axes here. But one of the places where these ideas collect is in the idea of anarchy, because it's sort of a cross, it's a non-denominational idea of how to move forward a existence, and it is self-regulating force of power. And that's what he seems to be.
So he's a libertarian.
Yeah.
We know that libertarianism doesn't work.
Yeah. At no point in human history has anarchy, functional anarchy, like survived for more than, you know, a period of months. So
I guess we knew from the Clone Wars that Saw Gerrera is an idiot. And so now we have further evidence. It's interesting that Luthen seems to recognize that Saw Gerrera has power mm-hmm. by virtue of having a rebel cell. And he's kind of trying to force Saw to play nicely with somebody so that at least he can be a useful force in the galaxy instead of whatever he's doing.
Luthen wants to start getting things together because he has a whole bunch of violent extremists. And he's like, Saw, you have X-Wings. This Anton Anto Krieger guy is an ox, but he's got some great troopers and he's going to go mess some stuff up, but he has to like sneak in. He doesn't have air support. If you work together, you would both come out of it massive winners.
You know who Krieger needs to talk to? The Ghost crew.
Maybe. I feel like if the Ghost was up against like four X-Wings, it'd have a little bit of a tougher time than against, I guess the most it's ever flown is like eight TIE fighters.
Hera Syndulla has never sweated X-Wings in her life.
So it's interesting that we've got Axis and Fulcrum right here.
I laughed so hard. I was like, really? I guess he can't be Fulcrum because that one's taken.
Yeah.
Is there a difference between an Axis and a Fulcrum?
Yeah, an Axis is something that thing, you know, depends on your coordinate reference system.
Yeah, feels like they're pretty synonymous.
Depends on your coordinate reference system. Fascinating.
Anyway.
I think the end of that conversation between Saw and Luthen is really important because Saw talks about how he's dealing with clarity of purpose. And then he says, Luthen, what's your deal? Like, what are you about? And Luthen says, I'm a coward. I'm worried that the Empire is going to grow so big that we can't resist it anymore unless we work together. And I'm worried we're not going to do that.
It was such a brilliant pivot, right? Because Saw Gerrera is a dangerous guy. And
he asks dangerous questions.
He does.
He's like, you have those deflectors here with you right now in those crates? I could just take them from you?
Totally, right? Mm-hmm. And so Luthen is playing very coy and trying to deflect the possibility that he might be sitting on the 100 million credits that were stolen because he doesn't want Saw Gerrera to know. Mm-hmm. And he's also doing a really beautiful deflection where he's pretending to be a coward, but he's not. We know he's not.
He's not. What he's doing is he is
defanging himself.
He is. He's sitting there and he's turning this from a conversation where teeth are bared into one where we're allies, where we're friends.
He is, and I say this with the utmost respect, a master manipulator. Mm-hmm. He understands people. He applies like a Kenobi-esque level of civility to every conversation. And he's getting you to do what he wants, but it doesn't work on Saw Gerrera. Like he recognizes pretty quickly that this is a lost cause. And then Saw asks that question.
Yeah.
What are you in it for?
Yeah.
And it's fascinating to watch him like cover his back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Luthen is very, very fun to watch. I'm a little bummed that he let Kleya talk him out of the Ferrix game when Bix really needed them.
So maybe, you know, so we're sitting here. Deidre is like, I'm putting a dragnet around Ferrix. And then some encrypted channel comes out of Pock's junkyard. And so they're like, all right, well, let's roll up Pock. And then Pock, under torture, reveals that Bix is the one who's doing it. And so if Bix had never made that call, they would have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing it because she wants Marva to have Cassian there at the end of Marva's life,
mm-hmm.
which is a noble cause.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Bix doesn't realize that Marva, when she says she's going full rebel, she's like, I have no sons. I have no daughters. I am carrying grenades in my Cane. Adult diapers. I'm good to go. I'm getting a walker with laser blasters in it because I am going to get rowdy and I'm going to die happy. And Cassian is off doing that as well. And there's no way to get in touch with Cassian. No one knows where he is. Marva is like, I understand that Cassian is out there doing stuff. I think Marva put two and two together. She knows that Cassian pulled the Aldani job.
You think so?
I don't think there's any way that she wouldn't be able to put that together. We also learn, importantly, either Marva was a past president of the Daughters of Ferrix Foundation, or she was a past president of Ferrix.
Ooh, I think she was a past president of the chapter of the Daughters of Ferrix.
Okay.
Which I don't know what that organization is.
Sounds great.
It sounds great. I want to go back to something you said.
Mm-hmm.
You said that Cassian is also fighting for the rebellion in his own way. And that actually opens up one of the big cans of worms to actually big cans of squigs. Topical that I wanted to talk with you about.
Yeah, what's that?
Which is what this episode thinks about morality and culpability and consequences. I have like a list of book club discussion questions for you because I'm thinking about Cassian rotting on Narkeena 5. Mm-hmm. Why do you think Cassian is being punished in this way by the show? What are we supposed to take away from this?
I think we're doing a little bit of setup. And part of it is when Cassian undergoes his intake into the prison, his head is on a swivel. He is watching everything. And it's great because there's like eight guards and they're all talking and they're having these conversations around him. And he is like, this means that, this means that, this means that. We get to watch the way Cassian enters a room, which is he knows your shoe size, which is like, he knows if you're right-handed.
Yeah.
Like we established that. He's the kind of person who knows when people take bathroom breaks and why. And he's watching these guards because he's like, this is useful information for later.
He's learning their terminology and their verbiage and like why they're so mad about being off schedule. Yeah.
And then he has to undergo actually a pretty severe psychic shift there in the first night. He's just holed up in the corner of his cell.
Well, it's the worst onboarding in the whole world.
It's pretty bad. And then we see that he's part of the whole system again. And it feels like we're watching Cassian do his thing, which is he goes in, he sees what's up. He becomes just another Joe Schmo. Nothing fancy about him. In fact, Kino calls him out on it. There's a moment after he's ready and they're rotating their widget.
He's been there for a month.
He's gotten pretty good. And the old guy, Olaf, is like, oh, the pin's stuck. And so everyone's like, ah, oh, come on. All right. And they lean back and Kino is like, what, you're just sitting there waiting? You guys have a chance to win today. And Cassian's like, yeah, you know, you're right. And like, he's just part of the crowd. He has done the Cassian thing. He's just a dude now. He's not anything more. He's not anything less. But he knows more than everyone else because he's watched everything. And I think he's got a plan to escape or take over the prison or blow it up.
Okay, interesting. I didn't read it with that level of nuance. I really thought he had just settled in for his sentence and he was just grooving. No. Like, this is what his life is now.
I don't think so.
Okay, interesting. At the same time that he is probably scheming his way out of this,
scheming
as he does, he's still being actively punished. This is not a fun thing that he's doing. Do you think he deserves this?
Like, as a literary character or for being a tourist in the wrong place at the wrong time? Or for blowing up Aldani? Or for not asking everyone to secure their legs and arms in the upright position and crushing Nemec?
Oh, God, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
So, yes, the answer, yes, all of those.
Okay. In the context of labor prisons in the past, the results have invariably been sabotage. The factories in concentration camps that were making artillery shells, those artillery shells would almost always reliably fail.
Mm.
Or had much higher like failure rates than anything else because you would still get punished for, hey, like we tested them and you guys have a 97% failure rate and they take them out to be shot. But it's still like you can't use that kind of labor. And that actually relates back to the fundamental premise of anarchism there, which is that all labor obligations should be consensual.
Right, yeah. I mean, but I had kind of thought that the Empire had successfully gamed the system by not just using enslavement as the incentive, you'll get punished if you don't build this engine component, but if you do a good enough job, then we'll reward you.
There's that, but then also they're doubling everyone's time.
So I don't think human beings deserve to suffer in this way, mm-hmm. right? I feel pretty strongly about that. It's interesting to think, though, about Narkina 5 as kind of the microscopic example of what the Empire is trying to do galaxy-wide, mm-hmm. of just taking away freedoms and meting out punishment, mm-hmm. however they feel is necessary, or not how they feel is necessary, but just they are delighting in total control mm-hmm. over the galaxy. So I found myself thinking, even if Cassian wasn't on Narkina 5, even if he was just still a tourist on whatever beach planet he was on, I think he would be living out a version of this. But this prison situation is so extreme that I was trying to figure out how it fit into Cassian's hero's journey. Mm. Because we had discussed how Cassian rejected the call mm-hmm. to adventure, to save the galaxy, to be a rebel, right?
Well, this is his punishment for that.
Well, but the punishment is usually walls of your own making. It's just now he's being imprisoned by literal walls. So it feels like there's no way for him to accept the call because there's no way out.
Isn't that the name of one of these episodes? But also that the walls of your own making is what Marva was talking about in the last episode, right? She says, there's nowhere where the Empire isn't except my own mind.
Yeah.
And so now Cassian needs to undergo the metamorphosis to someone who has fully liberated their own mind. Because he thought he could escape the Empire and is now learning he cannot. Because he was just a tourist. He did nothing wrong to get 6 years in prison. Mm-hmm. He had other crimes he had committed, but they don't, you know.
They did not technically apply on that day.
They did not apply
on that day. No crimes were done on that day.
Yeah. So there we go.
Okay. So you think Cassian still has a path forward on his hero's journey?
Absolutely. I mean, it's his show.
Yeah, you're right.
We got several more episodes.
I forget this is Cassian's show. He's just so chronically upstaged by every interesting character on screen.
He doesn't get many lines, but that's okay.
He speaks about 5 words in this episode. Mm-hmm. But he's watching.
He's watching.
He's doing a lot with his face.
And he meets Melshi. And he meets Kino. And he meets Ham and Zal. It means cool people, so.
I'm just mourning for the moment when I thought that it was literally John Hamm.
No.
That was Hamm.
I'm sorry.
They
could
crushed.
Not afford him. They have a whole bunch of, like, Stalin, the guy who plays Luthen is pretty big, and Andy Serkis is pretty big.
Diego Luna's pretty big.
He's big now.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
I find myself wondering just about these last kind of little threads. Mm-hmm. One of them is about Deirdre Miro. Mm. I've now kind of experienced the full range of the cycles of grief with Deirdre Miro off screen. I'm de-Deirdre-ing myself.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm no longer a Deirdre Miro fangirl. She girl-bossed way too close to the Empire. What drives her? Why is she the way that she is, and why is she doing what she's doing?
There are 7 ISB agents per team. There are 7 ISB teams. They all report to Major Partagaz. They're each playing against each other. Major Partagaz is playing against all the other ISB majors.
But she's not really playing against anyone except for herself. She's like me when I play a board game. I'm not really playing against anyone else. I'm playing to play the best game that I've ever played.
That's so untrue.
What do you mean?
When we play board games, if I beat you, you are so... You even said the other night when we were playing Outer Rim, which everyone should play because it's great. You said, I just love games where everybody ties. And I'm like, you just hate it when you don't win.
Because it means that I failed. I didn't play the best game that I've ever played. Because if I had, then I would have won.
It is possible to make no mistakes and still lose.
I hate that lesson with every fiber of my being, Sam.
Deirdre's playing against Blevin.
I think she's not.
Really?
I think Blevin is just in the way of what she's trying to do on her own.
Well, it's not a formal game at this point because the battle lines are invisible because it's spies. That's how spies fight. It's with knives and sniper rifles in the dark with blindfolds.
Deidre is drawing the lines of the game. Yeah. No one had connected the dots on this rebel activity. She is like, do you know that feeling when like you're in class and you get a project that has a little bit of creativity allowed and like some overachiever just took it and ran and so far outshone everybody else who was just doing the assignment to get it done. That's what Deidre Miro is doing. Mm-hmm. She's like setting her own assignments.
Because that's the only way to get ahead in a game like this. Like, imagine, if you will, you're Cyril Karn and you're like, I wish to work for the ISB. And they're like, absolutely not. You're too much of a bootlicker and you just suck. He's like, how do I suck less? Every single job I've had, I've succeeded at. I've succeeded wildly at. I'm overly ambitious even. The rules that Deidre has to play by are invisible and constantly changing. She has to make up the rules as she goes along, and so does everyone else.
But what is she playing for?
Her life, her livelihood. Once you're in a game like that, like, you can't get arrested, because if you're an ISB agent and you're sent to an Arcana 5, they will instantly kill you. If you can't get too involved with anything. You can't make any political dissent. You have to be politically perfect, because if they track down that you've, you know, written a blog post about maybe this time the emperor hasn't gone too far enough, then they'll kill you. Like, once you're in that game, you are in real trouble, but you get clout, you get power, and you get the ability to serve the empire. And I think that's what is so toxic about Cyril and what makes him so terrible is that he really wants to help the empire and isn't actually getting anything out of it. So what is Deidre doing? She's getting power for herself out of it.
I guess I wish that was in the text, because what's in the text, for example, in this episode, is Cyril saying, can you ever be aggressive enough in pursuing order? So at least we know what he wants. But we don't have anything like that for Miro, because she's so self-contained.
Well, maybe we'll learn more about her in the upcoming episodes.
Yeah. We still got a few left. I'm just always so hungry for motivations for big bads, and I so rarely am satisfied with the answers that I get from Star Wars. I feel like we have this conversation at least once a series.
Yeah, I mean, so who is the big bad of Andor so far?
The Empire. As a machine, as a construct.
As a construct, okay. A construct only exists by definition. So the real monster is the monster we define by ourselves. The real monster is not the construct, it's our relationship to the construct.
The real monster is the systematic loss of liberty for every free individual in the galaxy.
And that is what Luthen recognizes, and Nemec recognized, and Saw recognizes, and Marva recognizes, and Cassian is recognizing. And probably Partagaz knows too, is that like what the thing he wants to deploy is ideological purity across the galaxy. This ideological purity, where it is invoked, where it causes friction, that is rebellion. And that is what Luthen is trying to weaponize. And that is what Partagaz is trying to prevent Luthen from weaponizing.
Interesting.
But fundamentally, it's just a relationship between you and your polity. Do you wish to kill them or not? Do you wish to commit suicide by politics or not? Because everyone's going to die as a result of, or as a byproduct of, their political leanings. You know, you have the politics as they shift, and that results in however many deaths or lives. But what happens is, on a personal level, did you have continuous internal personal revolution, or did you have continuous internal personal acquiescence to power structures?
Well, then the Empire is playing a really dangerous game.
Hell yeah.
Because they are inciting so much personal rebellion inside of so many randos.
And that's why Cyril is actually the big bad of...
No!
No, okay, check it out.
Because he's the acquiescer?
Because, no, he's not the acquiescer. He's the one who takes it too far, too fast. He has drank so much Kool-Aid that he's Brasso-sized now, and he can't actually function, and he's gone too far. Deidre recognizes that. She's like, this dude is way, way too imperial. We need people who think for themselves and believe it, not people who believe it and might eventually think for themselves.
Mm. I don't think that makes him a big bad. I just think that makes him a fop.
He's a dapper
dan. Muppet.
No, he's a big bad to the emperor. Because if the emperor has too many people who are too far in that direction, who will cause havoc across Ferrix to track down one dude for killing corporate security, then that will incite rebellion.
Cyril really is a bigger threat to galactic peace than Cassian ever was.
So far, yeah.
Wow.
Because Cassian wouldn't have done any of this if it wasn't for Cyril.
Wow.
Cassian was like, those dudes accosted me. I'm just literally trying to make my way home. They were gonna kill me. I killed them first.
And Cyril's Karn, like,
yeah.
He loves his job so much, and he is actively sabotaging it. He's opposite of the good at his job.
Yeah.
He's so bad at his job.
So bad.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
On that hilarious note, I think we should probably take some time and pick someone who was really good at their job of being a bae.
Okay, let's do Job Watch.
It's time for Job Watch.
All right, who you got for Baywatch?
You mean Job Watch?
Yes.
So for Job Watch, I am picking the character that did the best job at doing the job. I'm picking Brasso.
Oh, man.
Because we didn't talk about this. I got to paint the scene. There's a big crowd of people on Ferrix, and the imps are like, clear a line, form a perimeter, blah, blah, blah. They're looking for Bix. Mm-hmm. And then the prefect sees her in the crowd and is like, Colleen. Mm-hmm. And Brasso is like, run. Mm-hmm. And Bix takes off running, and the stormtroopers and the imps are like, cutting through the crowd, and Brasso becomes a human orange plastic Gatorade tank and is just fumbling his way in front of everyone who's chasing Biggs.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'm so big. I'm just in the way.
I'm just a clumsy guy.
I'm just so clumsy.
And I laughed until I peed a little bit the first time I saw it. It's just incredible. Mm-hmm. He's got this completely bland expression on his face.
He's like, why are you guys running past me? I'm just a big, slow dude.
And it was just so perfect. And he's such a good friend. And he's so beefy.
And he, like, is doing his actual job, which, you know, he definitely has a kill counter for killing, imps, but also, or I guess corporate security, but also, like, he works a day job, man.
He works a day job, and in his free time, he checks on elderly women. He takes out imperial ships.
Yeah.
And he just cannonballs around, getting in the way. He's really using his big, beefy man privilege to the fullest extent.
Just full himbo.
I just salute the himbos of the world. God love you.
That's great.
Who did you pick?
I was literally going to choose Brasso. But my second choice here, because I think that's important, is Luthen.
Ooh.
Because Luthen is the kind of guy who shows up at a heavily armed rebel cell that he knows where it is, and very few other people do. And he's like, it's me, Dark Santa.
Ye old Saint Nick.
It's me, Terrorist Santa. Do you have any, have you made any friends, Saw Gerrera? And Saw Gerrera's like, I don't want any friends. He's like, I guess you don't get any little toys today. And like, that's a, but he does it. He shows up unarmed.
Saw Gerrera, are you going to share your toys today? No? You're going to kick everyone out of the sandbox?
Yeah.
Cool, I'm taking your toys.
Yeah.
Your potential toys.
Yeah.
They are mine.
And he does it in such a way, first of all, I mean, Saw Gerrera being acted so artfully is like chewing over these words. He's like not happy with this situation. But then he pulls back when Luthen pulls back and he's like, all right, well, it's all fun and love and war. Like, I understand that these deflector units, which I do really want, are not coming to me because I'm not going to do this. Like, he manages to cultivate this relationship and also continues to catapult the propaganda he has, which is like, we actually genuinely do have to work together eventually. Come on.
His message did not land, but at least it was heard. And he didn't burn any bridges. And I think not burning bridges is a really important character quality.
It was pretty remarkable, actually, the way he artfully moved to that conversation and got, you know, ideally he would have been like, hey, this rebellion, we're cooking off. Like, I need air support here. Like, let's do this. But Saw Gerrera is like, I'm not paying attention to anyone. I'm not listening to anyone's orders. And so he knows exactly what he has to bring to the table with Saw Gerrera. And presumably, Luthen has this relationship with all those other weirdos that Saw Gerrera hates. And so bringing them all together is his job. And I just admire his optimism. He has this moment with Clea when she's on the phone and she's like, I need you to tell me to shut it down. And he's like, I let him on the Fondor. He's seen my face. Like, this Andor character, it sucks that we have to kill him. I really have high hopes for him.
Aww.
And Clea's like, we have wider exposure. We've gone loud. With more impact comes more, you know, exposure to what's gonna happen here. And he still makes the tough choice. And I think that's really cool.
So even though he leaves Bix and potentially Cassian for dead, he's still your bae.
So here's why. He's going to take those deflector shields. He's going to give them to someone else with X-Wings. And that's going to go kill thousands of Imperial troopers. It's going to shut down a Star Destroyer. It's going to shut down a whole shipyard. It's going to bring the Empire down harder. When one makes a rebellion, one has to sacrifice a lot and know when to hold them and when to fold them. And what Luthen recognizes is that on Ferrix, the situation has become such that the tensions have escalated as far as I'm willing to escalate them because I am too close to this. There's too much exposure. We're going to cut off the exposure. If the tensions continue to escalate, that's on them, and good job to them. But he moves these pieces. He turns these dials. He spins these plates. He makes everything move with very delicate touches, and he only shows his face to the people who are really impactful. And I think that's really valuable.
So you like him because he's not only playing chess, he's putting the pieces out on the board.
Yeah, he is able to step away from the faces, from the people, and focus on the cause.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a sign of good leadership on his part. And it's tough. It's really tough. But he knows exactly what he is. He knows his relationship to this whole situation. And he knows the dials he needs to move it. And he's doing it. And I think in a way, he might also be sacrificing people to let them know that sacrifice and death are going to be a part of this.
Mm.
And that as we form a rebellion, many of us will die. And we need to get used to that now.
Okay. One vote for Brasso, one vote for Luthen, and none for Vel and Cinta, who are trying to kill Cassian Andor. I'm sorry, ladies. I love that you are in love, and I hate your mission.
We glossed over that.
We have known that Vel and Cinta are banging from, like, episode 4, and we keep forgetting to talk about it.
This is the first time they're very explicit about it. But importantly, Cinta is like, you love me because I'm a mirror and I show you what you need to see.
You
and,
dumb rich girl.
And Vel is like, I do not like being perceived in this way. I just wanna have like a hot rebel girlfriend. And the hot rebel girlfriend's like, I'm gonna kill some fools. Like, I'll catch you later.
I will never love you as much as I love the cause.
I'll never love you as much as I love killing stormtroopers. Like, that's...
That's so toxic. I'm so sorry, Vel. Your girlfriend's so hot and so toxic.
Vel's toxic too, though.
They're
a hot mess.
They are such a hot mess. God bless them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Sam, what hot mess are we diving into next week?
I can't hear you. Because nobody's listening!
Oh,
exclamation
no.
mark! We are watching Andor Season 1, Episode 9. Nobody's listening!
Exclamation point.
Exclamation point. That's what's up next.
That is horrifying.
Yeah.
I don't like it one bit.
It's interesting to invert that phrase because it could be like romantic, you know, like, oh, nobody's listening. We can do whatever we want.
Maybe if it didn't have an exclamation point.
Yeah, but otherwise it's like nobody's listening because you want people to be listening.
Yeah, because you're in prison on Narkeena 5.
Or you're on
Ferrix.
Or you're on Coruscant.
Oh, no.
Or you're Saw Gerrera and your caves go arbitrarily deep and they're full of X-Wing parts and detritus of grouchiness.
Just old man grouch.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. Well, we hope you'll join us next week while we uncover that whole box of goodness.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, if you want more Growing Up Skywalker, you can find us on the social medias.
The social medias.
We are on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, and we are on Threads. You can also become one of our monthly patrons. We are so close to finishing the Tartakovsky Clone Wars. We are scheduled to recap our last minisode on Thanksgiving. A wow. Thanksgiving gift to us all. I can't wait to be done.
I'm kind of ready to be done with the Tartakovsky as well.
We are having a lot of fun with it and a lot of really great conversations. Anakin is finally going through his trial of the spirit, which is fascinating to watch.
It's fun to go back to the Clone Wars, and the end of the Tartakovsky Season 2 is a really, really interesting way to bridge the gap between the stories, because Episode 3 starts off and it's like, boom, we're in a space battle. Like, why not just cut out the middlemen and get to the space battle? I'm just excited to get there, you know?
Yeah. And send this episode to the little old lady with grenades in her diapers.
Yeah. Wait, that sounds gross.
You're right.
Send this episode to your himbo.
Oh, to your favorite himbo.
We love all Star Wars himbos and all himbos in general, but Star Wars himbos, special place. Our wreckers, our heavies.
Oh, I love a himbo. Never have I ever met a himbo that I would not lay down my life for. Send it to your favorite himbo.
And if you get sent this, you're a himbo and it's okay.
And we love you. And we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Bye-bye.